I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. In March, President Trump signed an executive order restricting funds to universities that censor free speech on campus. But many colleges are grappling with how to respect the First Amendment and safely accommodate opposing views. The University of Missouri, Kansas City is the most recent school to make headlines after a clash between protesters and a speaker on university grounds. Today, we'll learn more about the campus event that resulted in the arrest of one student. Then, we'll talk with the principal of a Raytown elementary school about the proposal a 9-year-old pupil gave him to raise autism awareness. And we'll ask the student why this project is so important to her. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. UMKC recently was rocked with a controversy over free speech following an anti-transgender speech by Michael Knowles that raised questions about the limits of First Amendment rights. A protester sprayed liquid on Knowles using a water gun and was arrested and charged. In the days that followed, Republican lawmakers in Jefferson City questioned the university's response to the incident, with some calling for Chancellor Molly Agrawal to resign amid charges that his statement on the attack didn't go far enough. Also, several weeks prior to the speech, the same student group that brought Knowles to campus posted a sign at a literature table in the student library reading, "Hate speech is free speech." Now, a conversation about the two sides of the free speech controversy at UMKC. With us, Seth Schreibler is the chairman of Young Americans for Freedom. That's the group that brought Knowles to campus and set up the table in the library. Seth, nice to have you.
Thanks, Steve, for having me on.
I should point out that I teach at UMKC, and Seth is a current student of mine. Margaret Stansel is also here. She's a political science major at UMKC who supported the protest of Knowles' appearance on campus. Margaret, nice to have you, too. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Seth, what is YAF, and how long has the group been around?
YAF stands for Young Americans for Freedom. We are the college project of Young America's Foundation that operates across the country. They are a conservative activist organization that mainly promotes, is designed to help college and high school students promote the principles of freedom, liberty, and conservatism around the country.
And you created the group. Why?
I created the group by means of giving students who may not subscribe to the liberal orthodoxy that exists on college campuses, allowing them to have a voice and to organize with like-minded individuals and really just to promote a culture of open-mindedness and foster intellectual diversity on college campuses.
Margaret, I'm wondering what you know about this group and what do you make of it, the fact they even exist?
So I hadn't actually known much about the group before the events that took place a few weeks ago. I am a part of College Democrats and had known that that group existed and that there were some other maybe Republican groups on campus, but that they weren't as organized as College Democrats on campus. So that's really my prior knowledge before all of this.
And your relationship with the other protesters, Margaret, is what?
I had actually just heard about the protest through social media and texts that were circulating. I'm not really sure who organized it, and I don't think it was organized very well.
So you just showed up, it sounds like,
basically.
On your own.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So Seth, in March, just to go through this chronologically here, Young Americans for Freedom set up this table at the Miller Nichols Library right on campus there. The purpose of setting up the table was to do what?
Yeah, and just to clarify about that table, what the sign had actually said was "Hate speech is free speech, change my mind." In hindsight, it could have been framed differently to try and, you know, reduce some confusion and misinterpretation. However,
when I saw pictures of it, the only words that jumped out to me were "hate speech is free speech."
Oh, sure. And that was the picture that was circulating on social media and kind of blew up on Facebook and whatnot. And that's why I say in hindsight, the change my mind section should have been much bigger, because it was designed to promote real discussions between college students to give them a chance to rationalize their position on a very controversial topic like hate speech.
But that got lost in the course of the controversy here, because people just latched onto the first few words of that thing.
Very much so. It got lost in translation. I think people took it out of context. And just to give you a bit of background on the actual progress that was made, the people who actually were willing to come up and engage with us and say, you know, what do you guys mean by this? Can you please explain your position further? And the people that actually engaged with us and sat down to talk about it with us, I felt like we found a lot of common ground and made a lot of progress in that arena. But it was the people that were just so triggered and were so upset by just the very presence of wanting to engage in that type of that topic that, you know, they react in other means.
You know, Margaret, I'm wondering from your standpoint, how open and how willing are democratic-minded students to have a conversation with members of a group like CES? What's your sense of what the atmosphere is on campus these days?
I think that a lot of Democratic students would be very open to a conversation, and I know that Republican groups on campus have had joint meetings with College Democrats before, and I think that there were a few people in College Democrats that I know went up to the table to discuss with Seth's group. So I think they're very open to the conversation, but like you said, hindsight being that the sign should have been different, I think that the way it was written, that hate speech is free speech, it looked like you were trying to make people upset in the first place.
Yeah, and that's how a lot of people took it, Seth. Do I have that right?
Oh, I'm sure. And we can't be responsible for people's reactions, you know, to that. And on the topic of hate speech, it's really more so about not promoting or tolerating hate, as a lot of people took it to be. It was more so defending it in principle, saying that although we should be foster a society of decency and civility, and not to say hateful things to each other, it should still be protected, and your right to say it is the gist of it.
I guess it's all a matter of sort of how you approach that conversation then, right? I mean, that's an important conversation to have, and I guess it goes without saying it can be a tricky conversation to have under the wrong circumstances.
It absolutely can, and I think where people are kind of conflating, you know, hateful rhetoric to types of speech that should be regulated by some type of authoritative body like the government, I think people forget that freedom of speech, and I'll keep this brief, but freedom of speech is more than just a principle, in my opinion. I think it's the mechanism and way we organize our societies, and for us to develop a process where we can develop ways to formulate problems and then develop solutions to those problems. And I think it's very dangerous to infringe upon that process. And really, to in a society where freedom of speech is censored or we no longer have it, I think we lose our freedom to think as well.
Margaret, respond to that. And I should point out that you're on your way to law school, so you're a young legal mind in the works here.
Yes.
Respond to what Seth was saying.
Well, I think the issue is that you were saying that hateful rhetoric should be not censored and is a part of free speech. I don't believe that we have the same definition of what hate speech is. So hate speech to me is not just saying hateful, discriminatory things. Hate speech is a bit further. Hate speech has to be abusive and threatening. And so I don't think that hate speech is covered by the First Amendment, because I think it includes a threat or trying to make people incite violence against a specific group because of prejudice that exist. I think that you can say something rude and discriminatory that is not hate speech. I think there's a very fine line in between the two, though. So I don't believe hate speech is free speech because of that.
So you're saying when it becomes threatening, Margaret, that's sort of where you draw the line.
Yes. And I think that your definition of threatening can be a lot of different things as well. So when it comes to First Amendment, things are really hazy. And if you look at like Supreme Court decisions on the First Amendment and what can be censored and what's not, a lot of those decisions are really kind of flimsy as well. So,
yeah, there was a Supreme Court ruling a number of years ago that talked about this, the Tinker standard, that said the Supreme Court reaffirmed that student speech cannot cause material and substantial disruption of normal school activities or impinge on the rights of others. That might be one of the decisions you're referring to.
Yes, and I would agree with that, that for a learning environment to be conducive to everybody's learning and being able to get the information that we need and do our work, it can't be discriminatory or hateful to other students or harming their education.
But this notion, Seth, that Margaret's drawing this line between speech that is just normal speech and then threatening speech, what do you make of that?
Well, as Margaret alluded to, there has to be a fine line between what is like direct calls to violence and indirect calls to violence. I think this is a problem that lies within the hate speech argument of these arbitrary characterizations that on an individual basis people make up. And I'm trying to formulate a scenario to how we can legally and objectively define hate speech in a public discourse sphere and regulate off of those in that context.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I definitely need a refresher on that Tinker case, but you know, I just
notion think that when speech goes so far as to be threatening to others, is that a line that you would, I mean, you want to have an open dialogue here. And it sounds like if we go by what Margaret's saying, that when speech becomes threatening, that's crossing a certain line that would sort of prohibit you from having the kind of open dialogue that you're seeking to achieve here.
Sure. And I want to make this very clear. People shouldn't use their freedom of speech to shut down another person's freedom of speech. And when it comes to, as I said, indirect calls to violence, when there you have people on the alt-left and alt-right, all different outlets of the political spectrum, people like Louis Farrakhan, Richard Spencer, who openly call for, you know, violence and the extermination of certain groups and ethnicities and minorities. Look, I think it's gross and it's disgusting rhetoric to use. But again, it is protected by the First Amendment. When you get more into actual direct calls to violence, actual incitement to, like, hey, you know, I'll pay you a certain amount to go, you know, destroy this person's car. That's not what we're talking about.
Yeah.
I'm more talking about the indirect calls to violence that people have popularized based off of an individual's rhetoric that can lead to violence perpetuated by other individuals.
You know, this is not the U.S. Supreme Court, and I'm not a sitting justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, just to make this clear. But Margaret, just go one step further here. Seth's drawing a distinction between direct calls to violence and indirect calls. Does that make any resonate with you at all?
Yes. So I think the example that you used was saying that someone was calling for the extermination of a certain group of people or something like that.
To the effect of that, what Louis Farrakhan continually does.
Right. So I would not agree that that is free speech. And I would say that just calling for the extermination of a group of people and then somebody acting on that, I would not say is free speech and would definitely categorize that as hate speech that shouldn't be protected by the First Amendment.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're having a robust conversation this morning about the idea of free speech that's been tested in recent weeks on the campus of the University of Missouri, Kansas City. I want to point out that we tried to get a spokesperson from the university to join our conversation today and couldn't do that. So, Seth, let me just go back. Did you have permission from the university to set up the table that was at the Miller-Nichols Library that had that sign saying hate speech is free speech?
Yes, we were compliant 100% with the university on that. We followed the proper protocol, registering the event through RU groups, and you know, we took all the proper steps to ensure that we had the right to be there.
A spokesman said he didn't know about the hate speech is free speech sign that was added. Whose idea was it to display the sign?
That was a consensus for the entire organization, and we had come to that conclusion that we wanted to have that topic.
Margaret, you believe that Seth's organization doesn't actually understand the term they were supporting. Explain that to us here.
So that just is basically my opinion based off of what I've seen from the group and your earlier comment that hateful rhetoric should be allowed. It just means that I have a different opinion where I don't believe that hate speech is just saying anything discriminatory. I think that it has to contain some sort of threat or abusive behavior.
That's where you draw the line again, sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's turn to the Michael Knowles event at the Student Union. This is the conservative speaker who came on campus and delivered an anti-transgender speech. Margaret, again, how did you hear about the event with Michael Knowles and the ensuing protest that took place?
So we had known about the event for a while, and there was actually a counter event that was put on by several groups, including the UMKC Pride Alliance. That was a Pride Bash that was going on in the university walkway, and there was food and fun games and different organizations supporting UMKC Pride, basically. And then there was also a text and social media postings going around about going to protest the Michael Knowles speech afterwards.
And I'm wondering, Seth, why your group, YAF, invited Michael Knowles to campus?
We invited Michael Knowles to end this drought of conservative thought that has existed at UMKC. It's been about 5 years, from what I was told, since a major conservative political pundit formally stepped on campus. And I think it's important for people to know that just because something in a certain topic or idea that's being talked about on a college campus, just because it isn't popular, doesn't mean that now they're right for their opportunity to go there and have a platform and more so be amplified shouldn't be considered because it's not popular at all.
Critics said you were basically just trying to stir stuff up.
Of course, people are going to say that. They're going to jump to their conclusions and assume the worst of us because, again, as I said, if we, and I understand that this type of liberal orthodoxy exists at UMKC and college campuses around the nation, but for someone to characterize us as simply trying to, you know, get people riled up or to be provocateurs, it's just, I think, lazy thinking to come to the conclusion that just because something is not necessarily widely accepted in a certain institution, that it's simply not constructive and it's not meant to institute any type of progress. It's just meant to provoke and make people angry. I just don't think that's right.
Margaret, did you see this speech as offering a path towards progress, to use Seth's word here? Is that what this event was, or did you see it differently?
I saw the event very differently. So this speaker, Michael Knowles, has been known for giving speeches with the intention of getting people riled up, as critics have said. And I think that the specific topic of the speech as well was something that a lot of students felt was invalidating their existence. And I don't think it was a difference of opinion. I think it was literally a speech about saying that this group of people, what they're saying, they're feeling, it doesn't exist. That's not something that's real.
Now, you were in the audience that night, and I'm wondering, I was not there. What did he say that, in your mind, did he cross a line in the rhetoric that he used that night?
Yes, I think he did cross a line, because something that he kept saying, so when someone is transgender, sometimes people will make the option to get gender reassignment surgery. And so he was referring to gender reassignment surgery as someone mutilating themselves. And so it felt like to me that the way he was portraying it in that way was that it was something that was wrong in a really kind of nasty way that he was framing that. So that was just a specific thing I remember him saying that I could definitely understand why that would make some other transgender individuals really upset.
Just to go back to our previous conversation, did he say anything that you took as a direct threat? We're going back to this direct, indirect idea of threatening to people. Did he directly threaten people, or was it something different?
I don't think he directly threatened people, but I think that some of the things that he said, depending on who you ask, could be classified as abusive.
Okay. Seth, abusive rhetoric from Michael Knowles?
It depends on how you define abusive. And again, this is where I go back to this kind of arbitrary nature of what we use to define hate speech in the public sphere. Having the conversation about transgender issues, I think people are confusing it with, so we're going to have a conversation about it. It's now denying their existence somehow. Again, there is still a lot of research that needs to be done about these individuals and a lot of these psychological studies, mental health studies that still need to be developed so we can come to more definite conclusions about how to treat these individuals. And again, should they have the same rights as everyone else? Absolutely. We just need to know what is going on and knowing if there is some, you know, way to treat these individuals, if they, you know, actually do have something wrong with them, or is it something else? So,
Margaret, respond to that.
So you just mentioned research, and correct me if I'm wrong, but Michael Knowles is not a scientist or biologist, correct?
Yeah, he's a political pundit.
Okay, so, but he's not an actual scientist doing research on that, and he wasn't, like, presenting this kind of research at the speech, right?
Well, yeah, but that doesn't bar someone from actually reading up on the studies and being educated on it. I mean, I don't think it's necessary for you to have to be a psychologist or a scientist in order to speak on the issue.
But was his tone provocative that night, in your view, Margaret? Was he badgering people, or was he just laying out information?
I think he was definitely badgering people. Well, so when the protests started happening inside the speech and people were yelling at him, he liked to engage with the protesters and he liked to yell things back to them. It was a really weird situation because he was smiling. It was like he enjoyed yelling with the protesters that were obviously very upset because of the things he was saying, that was basically saying that there are only two genders and that's it, and anything else is mental instability or something like that.
Seth, how well did the university handle security at the event? What was your take on that?
I thought at first the protesters had engaged in shouting down Michael Knowles, and, you know, due to university protocol of that event, I thought after a while it was going to be necessary. All right, like, we need to move to ask them to leave. It's been a prolonged period of time. But, you know, after the whole assault thing happened, I felt like they handled it correctly and apprehended the attacker properly.
So your suggestion is the university should have asked the protesters, you've made your point, now leave. Is that what I'm hearing from you?
Per the protocol, rather, I mean, if it's an extended period of time, which it was like 15 to 20 minutes, you know, if they want to do it outside, away from the event, that's completely fine. But inside the event, you cannot disrupt them. You cannot disrupt the speaker. And they should have been asked to leave when they had an extended period of time disrupting the speaker.
We're talking about First Amendment rights, a big issue on the UMKC campus in recent weeks. Let's go to a couple calls here. Edward from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. And first of all, I just wanted to say that I am a longtime enthusiast, as is everyone in my family. I've listened for a long time. And in particular, I recently reread John Stuart Mill's On Liberty. And I wanted to mention a quote that is in the introduction, which is, "The peculiar evil of silencing the expression of an opinion is that it is robbing the human race. If the opinion is right, they are deprived of the opportunity of exchanging error for truth. If wrong, they lose what is almost as great a benefit, the clearer perception and livelier impression of truth produced by its collision with error." And I guess to follow that up with a question briefly, I know you're running out of time, do either of your guests see any, problem with the tendency of students to get so bristly towards opinions that are contradictory to their own? Is that something that perhaps inherently is not what the college campus is all about? That was a little bit bumbly, Steve.
No,
I apologize.
You did good, Edward. Margaret Stancil, respond to that, if you would.
So I think that it's definitely important to have these kinds of discussions on college campus. That's what we're there for. We're there to learn and learn from each other. I think that people get bristly, as you said, or upset because students feel very strongly about a certain way, and especially in this situation, there were a lot of protesters that identified as transgender, and in that way, they felt like it was a direct attack on their existence.
What about Seth's notion that maybe the protesters should have been removed after a prolonged period of time, again, to use Seth's word, 10, 15 minutes, whatever it was? Would that have helped?
I think that it would have helped for the protesters to not have been yelling at the speaker at all, actually. I think that so the protest was supposed to be a silent demonstration. At some point, there was going to be a phone alarm go off, and everybody that was in the speech for the protest was going to stand up and silently walk out, and I think that would have been much more effective.
So as we wrap this up, what is the state of free speech on the UMKC campus? Just briefly, Seth, how do you see it?
Political discourse is at an all-time low, and I hate to be a pessimist in that regard. But I do think we have the benefit of not being in government, where we can actually work to achieve the ideals of politics and political discourse without having to concede any sort of verbal grounds because we are at risk of, you know, losing votes or being kicked out of office. And the last thing I'll say is, I want to know who these people are. I want to know who the racists are. I want to know who the misogynists are. I want to know who the Nazis are. I want to know who these people are. And that's not necessarily saying amplify their speech to any given extent. But if we don't know who these people are and we're just going to walk around not knowing what we believe, it's just like, are we just not going to think? I just think that seems pretty stupid to me.
Margaret, Seth says discourse on campus is at an all-time low. What do you think?
I would not agree with that. I think that UMKC is a very open campus, and I think that groups like CESS have been given every opportunity to have their message heard, and obviously that's upset a lot of people, but they did have that opportunity, and they did use it.
Okay, we're going to leave our good conversation there. Thanks for making it a civil conversation as well. I want to thank Margaret Stansel, a political science major at UMKC, Seth Schreibler, a chairman of the Young Americans for Freedom group that brought Michael Knowles to campus. Thank you both very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Time for a break. When we come back, a nine-year-old's efforts to educate her elementary school about autism. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. Friday on the show, a man who shared his battle with opioid addiction. You can hear how he was able to kick his habit and the book he wrote about it. Just at, go to kcur.org/uptodate. Tomorrow, we'll look at the influence of immigrants on America's pop culture. That's tomorrow on KCUR's Up to Date. Well, not long ago, 9-year-old Mariah Turner sent her principal at Westridge Elementary in Raytown a letter. It began like this. The month of April is Autism Awareness Month. My brother, Emmanuel, who is 4 years old, has autism. He will be coming to Westridge in the next year or so. I just wanted to make sure that everyone understands what autism is so that they can help him. So we thought it might be a good idea to bring Mariah Turner here to our show so that she can help us understand what autism is. Mariah, it's really good to have you here. Welcome to Up to Date.
Thank you.
I also were joined this morning by the principal, Matt Jones, of the principal of Westridge Elementary. Matt, good morning to you.
Morning, Steve.
We've only got you for a few minutes, Matt, so I want to dive in here with you just for a couple minutes. What did you think when you received this letter from Mariah?
It was really awesome and exciting to see the letter that Mariah had sent in. It didn't completely surprise me because of who Mariah is, and she has had some other initiatives and ideas that she's brought to me, but to see where her heart came, and not only just to help anybody else, but now the connection with her brother was really powerful.
How did you respond then? Because I know the school is doing several things now to educate students about autism.
Yeah, so once I saw it, I, you know, wanted to be able to touch base with Mariah and said, you know, I first thank her so much again for her passion and drive for all the things that she does, and then just said we need to set a time where she and I could sit down and kind of talk about her ideas we had and wanted to get her vision of what this might look like.
And I just met her a few minutes ago, but I get the impression that this is a young person who's got a pretty clear vision.
Oh, absolutely. It's you saying that reminds me when she came to us, we have a club called Kid Lead, which instills leadership skills into students who have been blessed with the gift to influence others. And when I was talking to Mariah's mom about her applying for the club, I remember her mom specifically called her a powerhouse, and that's definitely a very accurate description of her.
Mariah, is that pretty accurate?
Yes, it is.
A powerhouse? Yeah. You don't shy away from that, right?
I'm going to try to.
Yeah. And Maude is here, your mother. Powerhouse, do you agree with that description?
I totally agree with that description.
Why do I quickly get that impression? That's exactly right here. Yeah.
Yeah, she always has us going, and she's always implementing a whole lot of things. So we just try to support her.
A lot of energy, I take
it. Yes, sir. Absolutely.
Yeah. Matt, what do you hope kids get out of this, what Mariah is bringing to Westridge Elementary?
You know, there's the obvious takeaways of just empathy and seeking to understand each other and acceptance. But most of this power and what I tried to push is the idea that, you know, you're more than just a kid here at school, and that when you have an idea, if there's something you want to do, that really sending the message to our students that you influence who we are as a building, what our culture is, what we want it to feel like, that they have the power to influence that more than any of us as the adults. And so really pushing for students to, you know, talk with their teachers or talk with their classmates or come talk to me or anywhere else. If you have an idea or there's something you care about or there's something, you know, this is your community too, and if you have an idea or way that you can influence, then I'm never shy away from that.
You know, how do you typically at school, Matt, how do you typically handle a student who's not being kind to others? I mean, especially others who might have a disability.
Sure. First goal, more than anything, is always to try to get to the root of what's the issue about. Is there, you know, an actual incident that's driven maybe the disagreement or the reason for, the disrespectful behavior, or is it rumor, or is it just not even understanding or really know each other? And sometimes, you know, we put up a wall or are a defensive and create situations just to kind of as a protection mechanism. And so we always sit down and try to figure out what's going on, what's the root of all of this. And then the initial goal is also to take that time then to be able to talk through and really understand where each other's coming from. And because majority of the time in my experiences, it's always been from something that was either misunderstood or perceived to be much greater than what was really intended. And then, you know, we always start to go from there.
And before you go, what kind of response have you had from school officials and other parents here, Matt?
It's been so overwhelmingly positive, just to see their, when it first even story initially came out through our district Facebook page, and seeing all the different community members and family members and parents and, make comments or like or share the story. And then even people that I'm friends or close to that know, I'm a principal here, but to see their reactions or to know that even a little bit more there that it had touched a chord.
Right.
And it was just, again, really special and excited because although this is a really big deal and things like this don't necessarily happen every day, the intent and heart of what Mariah has is evident quite often in our building, and so it's excited for us to and for the students to get recognized for that.
Well, that's Matt Jones, and I know, Matt, I pulled you out of a meeting here that you have to get back to. He's principal of Westridge Elementary in Raytown. Thanks so much for taking some time. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Well, Mariah, tell me a little more about why it was important for you to tell other students at the school about autism. Tell me what you were thinking there.
Well, my brother, since he had autism, and I knew he would be coming to Westridge in the next year or so, I thought, hey, some kids actually get bullied because they have autism, and I just didn't want that to happen anymore. I wanted them to feel included. So I thought, hey, maybe I could raise awareness telling other kids to stop bullying and to basically accept those with autism. Basically because, like, it's not really nice.
Right. Well, tell me, why would other kids bully a student who has autism? What's the thinking there, do you think?
Well, basically, some kids with autism are nonverbal, and it's because they can't speak. Some people find that actually really funny, and then they just start to go into the bullying process. So I just wanted that to all end at my school.
So these kids maybe are a little bit different, and other kids sort of see that, and they have some problems with that, it sounds like.
Yeah, there are actually three stages of types of autism on the spectrum.
Yeah, tell me about that. Tell me, what is autism? What is this?
Autism is a disorder that causes issues with social skills, communicating, and building relationships.
You know, you're 9 years old.
Yes, I am.
And this is the first time you've been on the radio?
I've actually been on the radio. This is actually my second time.
So you're kind of a veteran at doing this then, right?
You could say.
I'm thinking that maybe someday you might be president of the United States. Do I have that? Would that be an accurate thing to think, maybe?
Yeah.
That'd be okay, eh? Yeah. Tell us again, Maude, about your daughter getting involved with this. I can only imagine if you have a son at home who's struggling with autism, to have the older sibling sort of blazing a path forward has got to be pretty comforting to a mom.
Yeah, it's so comforting. And she is very passionate about making sure that her brother is taken care of. She mm-hmm. sometimes acts like she's the mom.
oh, really?
Yeah, she does. Because she is the oldest out of four children.
Ah.
My son was diagnosed 2 years ago, and we kind of struggled with even understanding ourselves what autism was because
right.
we weren't aware of it. We knew we heard of it, but we didn't know what it was. So we decided to make sure that we were empowered by knowledge, and we talked with different people, therapists, different community groups, and we just jumped right in once we got the diagnosis.
And as a mother, how concerned are you about an autistic son going off to school? I mean, that's obviously a big moment in any kid's life, but particularly mm-hmm. for a young man who might have autism.
Yeah. To be honest with you, it's concerning, you know, because a lot of people don't understand it, our family being one of them at a certain point. So instead of me looking at it to try to change my son, I want to change the community around him
mm-hmm.
to inform everyone that he comes in contact with, this is what it is, you know, and so let's involve him and let's engulf him with love.
How is he different? Can you describe him to us?
I can. Once he was diagnosed, I noticed different things when he was younger. Sometimes calming him down can be a struggle.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes his cognitive understanding the request of him and not having so much of a shade of gray, a lot of black and white.
Mm-hmm.
And noticing that, I was, you know, concerned, and we talked with the doctors, and they let us know that this, you know, autism is, he was on the autism spectrum.
Right.
And, you know, we put him in a school that has children with special needs there. And so they have really been working with him to get him to the point that he is self-sufficient.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The fact that your brother has autism, you know, Mariah, how has that impacted your relationship with him? How has that affected things?
Well, it has affected it because once my mom told me that he has had autism, I was like, "Hey, what's that?" And then we did like research, and then as I started to get to know my brother and what autism is better, we started building these relationships. It was more impactful that kind of brother and sister thing. To where, like, me and him can do, like, something, and he would catch on to it real quick.
Ah. Mm-hmm. So you're saying that understanding what autism is has really helped your relationship with him a little bit.
Yes, it has.
Yeah. And do I understand right that you and some of your classmates actually did some of the research that you're talking about? You did it during your recess time?
Yeah.
You gave up recess?
Yeah, and a lot of kids don't do that. So.
I was going to say, that's asking a lot. And what did you do during recess? Like, what things were you looking at to learn more about autism?
We were basically looking on a website called Autism Speaks, which is one of the most biggest groups that support autism research. So we were just looking up there for facts, and we started putting them on puzzle pieces, which is the sign of autism. So one of the days we went and we hung them up around the building, and this was really, really weird to me, but also exciting. One of the little kids looked at one of the puzzle pieces, and he's like, "Hey, what's that?" And I'm like, it was so weird because, you know, first graders don't really do things like that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it was like so important to me that one of the first graders actually read them.
So you actually made a puzzle with signs of autism so that other kids could begin to understand this?
The puzzle is the sign of autism, and we just, like, wrote the facts on it, and we hung them up around the building.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what else did her classmates do to make all this come about?
So Well, Mariah and I put together a proposal for the school.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just different ideas and projects that the school mm-hmm. could possibly do.
Ah.
And so it was like, okay, choose one of these and you guys can, you know, run with it. And so from there, I believe she got 11 students to be a part of her group. And then they chose to do the puzzle pieces because the puzzle piece is a sign of, for autism, one of the signs actually. And so
you're losing me there. Explain that to
me. Okay. So you know how for breast cancer awareness, they have the ribbon.
Right.
So for autism, it's puzzle pieces.
I see. Okay.
Colorful puzzle pieces.
Yeah. Or it's colorful puzzle pieces. That's their sign.
Mm-hmm.
Or the infinity sign. So it mm-hmm. just depends on who you ask. That's their sign. So they took the paper puzzle pieces with facts, and they wrote a fact about autism, and then they posted it around the school.
I see. And did you think kids read it then as they went around?
One of the little kids, the first graders, I think, read them.
Yeah, I think all the children read them.
Yeah, I think all the children read them because, like, you know, they look everywhere. They look at everything that has words on them, and then they try to understand them.
Mm-hmm. And do you have other projects in mind that you want to pursue to help educate your friends and classmates about autism?
Tell them about your goal that you have.
So I have a goal that I reach out to other students, and the proposal that I wrote.
And other schools.
And other schools.
Oh.
I will print the proposal out, and then I would send it off to each of the schools. So that way, every year, on April, in April, the month of April, which is Autism Awareness Month,
right.
We would all be doing the same thing.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that is what I am working on right at this moment.
So that's the next big plan here, it sounds like.
It is.
Yeah, it is. And how did you think the principal that we talked to a few minutes ago, Matt Jones, how did he respond to your proposal that you... Was it just you sitting down with him to tell him what you wanted to do?
Yes, it was. It was just me. And before I even wrote the proposal, I had the idea to just go up to him and say, can we talk later? I have a few ideas for this school. But then I came up with the idea, hey, that might not really work that great, so let's write a proposal.
Yeah.
Like a lot of other people do. So I thought to write a proposal, and we did.
Right.
And then when... I dropped it off in the office one day, and it turns out he got it, like I planned. And we started talking to each other. We had these meetings, and like then we came together one day and like, hey, maybe one day you can pick a few students. You go mm-hmm. to each class in fourth grade. And those students that want to join can come to your classroom, and we can search up facts, put them on these puzzle pieces. And then, once you guys are done with that, you guys can print out these new facts,
mm-hmm.
and you guys can share them on the announcements.
Yeah.
So, and since it was the first time being on the announcements, and I thought it was everybody else's first time, I'm like, hey, you guys, let's be like this day. These guys are going to come with me on this day.
Ah.
And of course, I will be going every day.
Yeah, but they try to announce like different facts each day across the school so the whole school can hear.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date. We're talking with 9-year-old Mariah Turner about the project she's doing on autism at her Westridge Elementary School in Raytown to educate kids about autism because her 4-year-old brother, Emmanuel, has autism. When you would go into these meetings with the principal, Mariah, would you be nervous?
No, not
this
really.
This is the principal of the school.
Yeah, I know. But I still wouldn't be nervous because I actually do pageants where I go into an interview and we sit up there for like 1 minute talking about questions. So it's kind of like a meeting.
Yeah.
Because you're wearing a sash across your shoulder. Tell us about what you're wearing here because it looks like it's something pretty special. It says Miss Missouri
Sweetheart.
What is that?
So I went to a pageant called Royal International Miss.
And one for the state.
And I won for the state of Missouri.
You won for the whole state?
Of Missouri, yeah. Yes.
That's pretty incredible.
And so in 8 weeks, yay, I'm going to Orlando, Florida to compete for the international title for my state. So, and hopefully I get to do it, because if you do, you get to win a cruise. And I've always wanted to go on one of those, so.
Well, can I come on the cruise if you win? I'd like to come on that cruise. That would be pretty fun.
Yeah.
And but you have to be able to answer questions to it to be part of the pageant, it sounds like.
Interview is actually the main event of it. Like one of it's where you win.
Right.
Yeah.
That is where you went, and when I did that, I ended up becoming I had a great interview and I got Miss Missouri. So
wow, congratulations.
Thank you.
Well, Maude, your daughter seems unusually driven, unusually articulate. How where did that come from? I can see where it came from, but tell me about that.
Yeah, so her father and I, my husband, we've been pushing Mariah to just be great, and her personality showed when she was younger. So she started reading at 2. She was dancing, singing. She does it all. So right. Pageants is just a stepping stone of one of the things she loves to do. And one of the options is Role Model, which is a community service queen to just bring awareness. So if she wins the international Role Model autism awareness, and being an advocate for autism will be her platform.
Wow, that's
so
great.
So she'll be able to reach people around the world.
You know, we hear a lot, Mariah, about how hard it can be for adults to raise a child with special needs, but I'm wondering what's it like for a sister, because, you know, does Emmanuel frustrate you sometimes?
Well, he does, but in the end, my parents always tell me that he is frustrating sometimes, and like getting him to calm down sometimes is really hard, because I don't know what calms him down. And then sometimes I just feel like he gets more attention.
Right.
But then in the end, my parents tell me that they love us all the same.
Okay. So that sounds pretty good then.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I sure appreciate you coming in to talk to us today. And I wish you all the best in the international competition, okay?
Thank you.
And thanks for doing what you're doing at Westridge Elementary.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Mariah Turner and her mother, Maude. Thank you for coming in too, Maude. I wish you guys the best
of
luck.
Thank you for having us. Yeah, we appreciate
just a
it.
Remarkable young daughter you have here with you.
Thank you.
Last week, we looked at the rise in domestic violence in Johnson County. You can hear that conversation and others at kcur.org/up-to-date. You can find and follow us on Twitter. We're at kcurupto-date. You can follow me at Steve Kraske. Tomorrow, we'll look at how pop culture aids the assimilation of newcomers to our country. Our show is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Devin Davis, and Elizabeth Ruiz. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.